de Nicaragua.
¡Viva!
¡Viva el pueblo de Granada!
¡Viva!
Welcome to the 4 o'clock hour. You're listening to KPFK 90.7. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm here with my co-host, Eric Mann. Today we'll bring you some voices from the front lines. From London, England, we will have Sue Branford, BBC Brazil correspondent and co-author of the newly published Lula and the Brazilian Workers' Party on New Press. She will be discussing her assessment of Lula da Silva's first year in power and her new book. And then, from San Antonio, we will bring you Ruben Solis, organizer with the Southwest Workers Union. We'll be speaking with Ruben on the recently proposed guest workers program and immigration reform legislation from the Bush administrations, its impact on the immigrant workers' rights movement, and the presidential election vote in the Southwest. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Mann. Welcome to the 4 o'clock segment of KPFK 90.7 FM. We call our segment Voices from the Front Lines, and I'm here with my co-host, Manuel Criollo. Today, at a time when President Bush is going to be meeting with the president of Brazil, commonly called Lula, we have with us Sue Branford, who is the co-author of the book Lula and the Workers' Party in Brazil, which she did along with Bernardo Kaczynski. And welcome, Sue. Very nice to have you on the show.
Nice to be on it.
What I'm going to do, Sue, is just give you a little bit of framing in both having read your book, and Manuel and I will both be talking to you. I think we're living at a time of a sort of a classic strategic dilemma, which your book goes into. And having just returned from South Africa, where I spent a lot of time, I think there's some analogies. In both South Africa and Brazil, the revolution comes to power in an electoral manner.
Yes.
In both South Africa and Brazil, massive compromises have to be made to allow that electoral transition to take place without an armed struggle. In the South Africa case, significant concessions to the white minority. And as your book pointed out, the PT, the Workers' Party in Brazil, was caught in an electoral dilemma, which is it consistently was able to get 30% of the vote, attracting the most militant proletarian elements of the society, having great moral authority, but needing the 51%. And as your book points out, in order to get that 51%, essentially, Lula and, to some degree, the PT had to make very significant overtures to international capital and to the middle classes who support the interest of international capital inside of Brazil. So now we're sort of faced in this sort of classic dilemma, which is the left wing comes to power, but what they're governing is capitalism. And they're governing capitalism in the middle of a very rough international set of circumstances, where even questions of national sovereignty in the capitalist system are being called into questions. Just to let you know, Manuel and I believe in the role of compromises. We see ourselves as left, but not ultra-left. And I think that your book creates almost a blueprint for the debate. So what we'd like you to do throughout the interview, and we'll ask you a variety of questions, is begin with sort of a brief sense of what is the history and what were the compromises necessary to at least take electoral power. What were the achievements? What are the legitimate left critiques of those achievements versus what you think are the ultra-left critiques of those achievements? And then we're going to get to what's the role of social movements such as the MST and the pressure from below, and even what are the struggles inside the party? And then finally, how much national sovereignty is there in the age of U.S. imperialism? And if you finish this, Sue, you get a Ph.D., and a postdoctoral degree in international studies. Okay? Why don't you start with the history and the sense of compromises to get in and how you assess that? That is, how did Lula finally on the, I believe it was the fourth shot, is that correct?
It was the fourth. I mean, I was actually living in Brazil in the late 1970s. I was the correspondent for the Financial Times, the big financial newspaper here in London. And I was there when the military came to power in Brazil in 1964. And by the late 1970s, their grip on power was loosening. So in an interesting fashion, we heard there were two movements in Brazil. Down in the south, the landless peasants were beginning to flex their muscles and were beginning to occupy the big latifundios, the big estates, and demand agrarian reform. And further north, in the industrialist part of Brazil, around São Paulo, the industrial workers were beginning to carry out strikes that were illegal at that time. And I'll never actually forget the first time I met Lula, which was way back in 1978. As I said, I was working as a foreign correspondent, and we heard that there were groups of industrial workers collecting in the suburbs of São Paulo in what they call the ABC, which was the sort of big industrial belt around São Paulo, and that they were planning a strike. So we sort of went out there in a taxi, and I remember it was sort of pouring with rain, and the meeting had been held in a hall, but it got so big that they'd actually transferred to a football pitch, which was the only place big enough to hold them, and they reckon there were 70,000 workers there. And Lula was the industrial leader who was there in the front, standing on a table with a very inadequate microphone, talking to the workers, and nobody could hear properly. People in the front were telling people at the back what he was saying, but you've got that feeling of real excitement. This is the biggest political event in Brazil for 15, 20 years, that the industrial workers were going to actually demand political freedom. They were going to start striking again. And that's how it all began. So in the beginning, it was very much a movement of industrial workers, a trade union movement. But then by 1982, they felt that they weren't going to get the kind of political reforms they wanted just by being a labor movement. So they decided to set up what they called the Workers' Party, the Partido dos Trabalhadores, the PT. And this would be very much a party for workers, urban workers and rural workers, and they were going to use this party to actually achieve the kind of political and social reforms that they felt Brazil needed, and which were very much the kind of things we're still hoping that they're going to achieve today. Brazil has an extraordinarily unequal distribution of income. They wanted to distribute income. They wanted to distribute land. Brazil has an unequal distribution of land, another thing they inherited from the colonial experience. And so they were campaigning for these kind of fundamental reforms that they feel are necessary in Brazil before it can become a properly developed and egalitarian society. And so, as you said in your introduction, they tried to begin with. They were very reluctant to form any kind of alliances with other political parties. They wanted to win on their own terms to carry out their own radical program of reform. But it was after his third defeat in, let me see when this would have been, in 98, that Lula, who emerged as the main leader of the PT, they talked about having other leaders, but Lula's got that charisma. He is an extraordinarily powerful, popular figure. And so they have finished up having him as their candidate again. But after his third defeat, he said, I'm only going to stand for president, I'm going to run for president one more time, and this time I want to win. And if it means making alliances, forming coalitions, then we'll do that. But Brazil is, they felt at that period after 10 years of market reforms that Brazil was going down the wrong route and they needed to win power. So they did make concessions, and Lula won in the elections in 2002. But he, as we've been seeing, as he's completing the first year in power, this has come at a cost. It has been difficult for him to push through the kind of reforms that he wanted. But it's not just the alliances at home. Perhaps the biggest factor that is constraining the PT is the fear of some kind of financial collapse, which would happen if foreign creditors pulled their money out of the country very quickly. When was it? It was in May 2002, when all the opinion polls were showing that Lula was going to win, that there was a kind of mini financial crisis in Brazil. there were rumors among the bankers that Lula was going to declare a moratorium, default on the foreign debt if he was elected in the October of that year. So bankers, I mean, it's not just foreign bankers, domestic bankers as well, began to pull out money. There was a mini crisis. Interest rates had to go up. And Lula had to, he made a speech to the nation in which he committed himself to financial responsibility, not to default on the debt, to actually carry on with the deal with the International Monetary Fund, with the IMF. And it worked. The markets calmed down. Lula was duly elected. But he is now actually having to govern with this very heavy restraint of financial orthodoxy. I think Lula did this partly because just at this time, in May 2002, Argentina was going through a tremendous financial crisis because in January 2002, Argentina had been forced into a default on its foreign debt. All the money had left Argentina, and Argentina went through a terrible financial crisis in 2002. The economic output fell by 12-15%. Unemployment was much higher than ever before in Argentine history. And so Lula felt very much that if there was any kind of serious financial crisis just as he took over, if he took office, then any chance of running, of having a successful government would be ruined. So with Argentina on the doorstep, he was under double pressure to be careful, to be moderate. And so this, I think, is what we've seen in his first year in government.
So you framed the parameters really well, the caution. One of the things that we know is that historically the classic socialist, revolutionary socialist position is that you have to find a way to pretty radically and immediately pull oneself out of a market set of conditions, even discussing autarky and things like that, because of the pressures of a world financial crisis that's always in position to pull the money. On the other hand, that's not the exact historical possibilities right now. So why don't you help us essentially do this? If you were Lula, tell us the greatest achievements that you've made under these conditions. And now if you were a left critic, let's start within the PT itself. What is the sharpest criticism coming to Lula 1 year later that might say, even under these historical circumstances, you have not pushed the historical limits to their utmost historical possibility? Why don't you maybe frame where the debate is going on inside the PT, and then Manuel will take it further, even outside the PT and other places.
Well, if I was Lula, I think I would say I have achieved macroeconomic stability. What I've achieved this year, just before I took office, interest rates, well, the thing they called, which is sort of Brazil risk, which is the extra percentage points that Brazil has to pay on any loans it borrows abroad because it's seen as a big risk. Well, just before Lula took over, this Brazil risk was 2,500 points, which meant that Brazil had to pay an extra 25 percentage points on money it borrowed. So if the money interest rates were 4%, Brazil would be paying 29% annual interest rate on this money. And because people were worried about Brazil, but now this Brazil risk has gone down to 430, which means it's paying an extra 4-5% percentage points on the money it borrows, which is a big reduction. He could say that he's actually, Lula have managed to fulfill the agreement with the International Monetary Fund. I've run a big surplus on the budget, equivalent to 4.5% of GDP, a huge budget surplus, which I'd agreed with the IMF. I've got everybody tranquil. Brazil is very well regarded internationally. We're borrowing money freely again. We have a great deal of stability. Now, if I was on the left of the Workers' Party, I would say, but none of this stability has actually meant an improvement in conditions for the Brazilian population. Unemployment has actually increased in Brazil over the last 12 months. Lula came to office promising 10 million new jobs, and he finished up making an extra 500,000 people unemployed. I could say that because the Brazil has honored its agreement with the IMF to have this big budget surplus, the government has actually been unable to carry out the social programs that it wanted to do. It has made some advances in zero hunger, an ambitious program to end hunger in Brazil. It's made some modest advances, but it's done nothing on the scale that most people were hoping for. And the debt, the public debt, has increased. I mean, Lula did inherit an extraordinarily difficult situation. I mean, even making these big efforts on the economic front and running this big budget surplus, Brazil only paid half of the interest on the public debt. So the actual interest on the public debt, some of which is foreign and some of which is domestic, is 10% of GDP, and it's enormous. So even making a huge effort, Brazil has only paid half of the interest on this debt. So if you're on the left, you could say, Brazil, this debt is unpayable. Lula should have confronted this problem and should actually be calling for some kind of rescheduling of the debt, which will come sooner or later. I suppose that the people on the left feel that Lula has got to do what, in fact, he promised to do, which was to put the social progress of his reform program before paying the debts, including the foreign debt. But, of course, when you get into office, it is very difficult because you start feeling the tremendous risk the country is going to run. If it does step out of line, do something that the bankers don't want, then they will start pulling money out of Brazil, and you could finish up with a big economic crisis on your hands. So it's this sort of dilemma between actually getting the economic stability the country needs and actually the government having the money, having the resources to actually carry it, to fund all the reform programs that the government wants to carry out. It is a very big dilemma.
This is Manuel Criollo, and I'm here with Eric Mann, and we're listening to Sue Branford, the author of Lula and the Workers' Party in Brazil. I know in October you wrote an article talking about one particular dilemma around the Workers' Party, where the Workers' Party is beginning to assert some pressure on Lula, sort of saying, we've learned from Lula our actual direct action, and so they're beginning to be the beginnings of frictions between the MST and Lula. Can you describe some of those frictions?
Yes, well, the MST is this rural workers' party that I mentioned a little while ago, that when the industrial workers were organizing in São Paulo, down in the south of the country, the rural workers were organizing, and they've created what is one of the strongest and most powerful social movements in the world, which is the MST, the Rural Workers Movement. And they've, over the last 15 years, they have developed a strategy for direct action. The MST has always been very unwilling to trust government. So it's always said, we're only going to get land if we actually go out there and fight for the land. So they've had, from the beginning, this strategy of occupying land, of going into the bigger states and occupying the land and then demanding that the government expropriate this land and give it to landless families. And Lula is a big hero among this landless movement. As they've always said, it was Lula who showed us how to mobilize, showed us how to go to the streets and demand the kind of reforms that we want. So they have been tremendously optimistic a year ago when Lula came to office. And I actually think this is, if there is going to be an area where Lula makes a really big difference, it is going to be in the area of agrarian reform. Because although they're supporting Lula, the members of this landless movement are also carrying on with their mobilizations. And in fact, in the beginning, I haven't heard him say it very recently, but in the beginning, Lula was saying to them, just go on mobilizing. I need pressure from you to actually, as a counterweight to the pressure I get from creditors and from orthodox economists. So the the MST, the Landless Movement, is going on mobilizing throughout the country. And I think that there now is something like 200,000 landless families. That's about 1 million people squatted on the side federal roads waiting for Lula to give them land. They said Lula, through the whole of his political career, has promised radical agrarian reform when he got to office. But now he's in office, and we're going to get agrarian reform. So this is an enormous internal pressure on Lula to carry out agrarian reform. And just a month ago, his government drew up quite a radical program of agrarian reform in association with the landless movement. They're going to settle something like half a million families over the next 3 years, they hope. But it's interesting to see that although they spelt out the resources for this program in the actual program that they've produced, they haven't put these resources into this year's budget. So we've still got this dilemma that Lula is promising this program of agrarian reform, but it is actually incompatible with the deal that he signed with the IMF. So I think this year, 2004, is going to be really the make or break year for Lula, because he's spent his whole political career calling for reforms, aligning himself with movements like the MST, and yet to deliver the kind of reforms they want, he is going to have to break the agreements he made with the IMF in terms of keeping this very high budget surplus. So I think Lula is sort of caught in the middle of these sort of conflicting pressures, and we don't really yet know which way he's going to jump.
This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We are on the phone with Sue Branford, author of Lula and the Workers' Party in Brazil, a correspondent for the BBC World News for many years. This is Manuel Criollo. I'm here with Eric Mann. The interesting thing about both internal politics inside the PT and the MST relationship to the Workers' Party, can you describe forces that are outside, let's say, the in-and-out strategy? In other words, there's a united front to win rural reform or land reform. There's a united front to expand the need for poor families and working-class families in Brazil. Can you talk about forces outside of the PT that are to the left of them, and what's their critique of Lula, and what are they doing on the ground in Brazil?
I suppose the forces outside the PT are still relatively small. There's a lot of people who are becoming unhappy with the slow pace of reform, but many of them are still within the PT, fighting for their policies within the PT. But I think there's a growing debate within the PT whether or not they should stay within this party. I mean, one of the problems that happened, and one of the things that is creating a real sort of impetus to the internal debate within the party, was a decision by the PT in December to expel four of its members in Congress for voting against the government on economic reforms. One of the people who was expelled was an extraordinary, very charismatic woman, Eloisa Helena, one of the founding members of the PT, a fighter who's been there right from the beginning. And she and some of the other members of the PT felt very unhappy with some of the reforms that the government has been implementing over the last year to carry out its agreements with the IMF. In particular, she was unhappy with the reform of the social welfare system, which has ended some of the rights that workers have, to particularly pension rights in Brazil. It is a highly controversial issue, but in fact workers, some workers within the state sector did have good conditions. I mean, they could retire after 25 years of full employment on half wages, which weren't particularly high wages, but these gains in some ways were won when Brazil had quite a low life expectancy, and it is a weight on the state to be paying pensions when somebody's 40 to 45 or before they reach 50. There's been a big controversy over on the left of the PT did feel that they hadn't elected a PT government for it to actually abolish some of the hard-won workers' rights. So she and three others were actually expelled from the PT because the PT has always had this tradition. It's actually a Leninist tradition that you have full debate within the party, and then you vote on a policy. And even if you voted against the policy, if you're within the PT, you have to support that policy publicly. Of course, this policy was drawn up when the PT was just a party, and now it's a government. And people like Louisa Lerner are saying, well, why should we vote against the policy that the PT was forced into because of its coalition with more moderate centrist parties? It's not something that we support. And after quite a lot of internal debate, these four people were expelled, and some members of the PT have followed them and are talking about creating an alternative party. But the vast majority of people on the left have decided to stay within the PT at least for this coming year, which they're seeing as crucial. They believe there still is space within the PT to get things changed. And actually, when you go to Brazil, there's some extraordinarily left-wing and effective people all over Brazil having come to office through the PT victory. And I think there is a sort of feeling when you go there in recent weeks that Lula is going to have to change, that there's so many expectations, so much mobilization within the party and pressure for him to do more on the social front, that I think the feeling one is getting that he is going to have to take more measures, more progressive and more daring measures, just to give in to the pressure for change within Brazil, and he will have to take a tougher line with the foreign creditors and with the bankers at home.
We'll be right back with Sue Branford. Thank you.
The candidate you're about to hear, Harrison Weil, is with the Coalition for Justice.
Centralization is again underway at Pacifica. Executives and lawyers have imposed policies that keep impoverished and incarcerated KPFK listeners from voting. These executives are also moving to eliminate shows that don't raise enough money, while at the same time resisting any reduction in funds for the national office. The communities that suffer the most must be heard. KPFK's programming council must be empowered. Financial reports must be more transparent. Our new programming must be allowed to mature. For one thing, we can learn from groups like the Zapatistas as we try to make our new media democracy actually work.
The candidate you just heard, Harrison Weil, is with the Coalition for Justice. We support affirmative action guarantees, grassroots democracy, local control of KPFK programming. Visit the Coalition for Justice at radiojustice.net.
We'll return with our conversation with Sue Branford. Stay tuned.
I think we're in a historical period where the upside is the victories in everywhere from Guatemala to the electoral possibilities in El Salvador to including the victories of the ANC. On the other hand, the kind of retaliation against left-wing comrades who have been your comrades all these years. For instance, I consider myself in many ways a Leninist, but you can read Lenin a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherent in Leninism that says you expel four members who are elected from the legislature. That's not inherent. If you're a democratic centralist party in the middle of armed struggle in El Salvador, you may have to impose that level of unity, but here he is playing ball, certainly in terms of trying to get votes in the legislature. He's reaching out to people in other parties. So to not reach out to the left wing of his own party and to resort to expulsions, I'm just saying from afar, is not a healthy sign. There was a story that the Communist Party, as you know, the South African Communist Party, which is such an integral part of the ANC, within about 2 years of taking power, Mandela went to the National Conference of the South African Communist Party, and he and Mbeki read them the Riot Act, like, don't you dare pressure us from the left. You know, we're the government now, you know, and yet the Communist Party is saying, but that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what we do. So I think that the tension between the Lula administration and the left wing of his own party is one that he's going to have to resolve much more effectively, because the dilemma, as you know, is on one level you drive them off into being a relative splinter. On the other level, the only people you keep inside the party are those that do what Lula says. And then one last dilemma, which I want you to comment on, which is, you know, we had in the United States a big discussion about the surplus. And the surplus was a totally demagogic argument. When the Democrats were in power, they were told you couldn't run a deficit. And that was code for you can't give money to the poor. And then as soon as they so-called balanced the budget, within 2 years, George Bush says, well, if you want to run a deficit for militarism and tax breaks for the rich, he ran the deficit right back out the door. So I think that the fight over the deficit versus developing a so-called surplus may become the sort of line in the sand for Brazilian policy. Do you think that's true? And do you think that his discussions with George Bush is going on today may be some arena for that struggle?
I think what makes Brazil different is that its degree of foreign dependency. I think it is vulnerable to foreign creditors in a way that the United States is. And the last analysis, at least until now, is the United States can resolve its deficit by printing dollars, because everybody in the world wants dollars. But the Brazilian government can't print reais. It's in a subordinate position, and this does sort of tie the hands of Lula. And I think what we're seeing, Latin America has been through 10 or 15 years of neoliberalism, of market reforms, which have universally failed. The Latin American population are getting poorer, and there's a general feeling of discontent in the region that things have got to change. But nobody actually has sort of found a way forward in which you can actually bring real sort of social reforms and empowerment to the poor while respecting democracy and also without provoking a sort of huge conflict with your foreign creditors. So I think that the PT is too cautiously, but it is trying to find a way forward, realizing the period of neoliberalism is over, but nobody quite, we haven't got a new paradigm. We don't know the way forward. And it's interesting that the areas where Lula has been, feels most confident and has been most assertive have actually been in foreign policy. He is emerging as an important third world leader at forums like the WTO, the World Trade Organization talks in Cancun in Mexico last September. He was one of the people who was standing up for the developing world, negotiating, working with China and India, and saying we're not just going to have the WTO deals imposed on us. We're not going to allow the United States and the European Union to say that we've got to open up our markets, we've got to allow foreign investment into key sectors such as services, such as banking, technology, while they don't make the reforms to their agricultural subsidies, which are making it so difficult for us to export, to send our exports abroad. And so Lula has emerged as a powerful, as a courageous leader on the external front, and he's negotiating with third world countries all over the world. He's giving particular attention to developing Mercosul, the trade bloc that involves Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Brazil. He's forming alliance with Néstor Kirchner in Argentina. He is standing up to the state, and I think this is going to prove important over the next few months, over Venezuela, because there's growing indications that the Americans are very unhappy with the government of Hugo Chavez, and it seems just over a year ago there was an attempted coup, which there seems to have been some U.S. involvement in. And one can see U.S. impatience with Hugo Chavez growing again, and I can imagine that the Brazilian government will have a key role in actually saying no, that Hugo Chavez is the elected president of Venezuela, and we're not going to allow foreign intervention. So on sort of foreign policy, Lula is achieving quite a lot. He's actually in domestic. I mean, there's a lot of good initiatives on the social front in Brazil, programs to improve education, programs for popular housing, but all kinds of programs. But the big constraint is lack of money, because they are running this very heavy budget surplus. But you can, one can understand the fears that it would be possible if they actually do force a rescheduling of their debt on foreign creditors. They could face a very serious crisis. This is a real dilemma.
It's an important thing that you're talking about is Brazil's posturing, at least in the world front, and very interesting alliances between India and China, especially at the WTO. Can you talk about what are some of the retaliations from the United States? Because it's not like Brazil's moving on their own, trying to pave a new wave. The United States and the Bush administration in particular are already responding, particularly economically. We've got about 2 minutes. Can you talk about that piece of what Washington is moving on at this moment? And what can the people inside the United States, given that we are in the government that is suppressing it and these governments, what can we do inside the United States to counterbalance that?
I think we're at a fairly crucial moment in relationships between the United States and Brazil, because the United States' most urgent policy for Latin America is to create this huge free trade area of the Americas, which brings together 34 countries in Latin America in an expansion of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Area. And Brazilians are saying, just a minute, we don't want to go so fast. We want integration on our own terms. And there is growing sort of tension within the United States and Brazil over this. And it's, I think the United States has got to recognize that there are new powers emerging in the world. I mean, China, India, and Brazil. And Brazil is a strong force in South America, and it would be much better for the United States to actually work with Brazil to help Brazil actually overcome the economic straitjacket it's in at the moment, and together sort of forge a new way forward. Lula does not want to be involved in a hostile confrontation with the United States. He wants to work out some way of going forward together. But he is going to defend Brazil's national interests. And I think this is perhaps the most important thing about Lula, that he is actually a working-class president. He doesn't think, he hasn't got that sort of colonialist mentality. He thinks independently. He's trying to sort of create Brazil's nation in its own right, not just sort of a copy of what's happened in the world, what's happened in the United States before. And I think the Americans have got to, or I hope they will recognize and give space for Brazil to find its way forward.
Well, I think that just as Lula does not want to overthrow capital in Brazil, but the Brazilian capitalists are the one initiating the war. And similar to how Lula does not want to engage in a direct confrontation with the United States, the Bush administration does, and I would say the Clinton administration as well, want to engage in a destruction of self-determination inside of Brazil. And I think that your book, Sue Branford, Lula and the Workers' Party in Brazil, is a tremendous contribution to the debate about the limits and opportunities and very, very hard choices for a real left. And I think that there's very few people in the United States, you have to understand, at a level of social movement and sophistication as the Workers' Party in Brazil. So there's a tendency to think everything is just a debate. And I think what your book points out is that there are real conditions that frame the options for the left. And thank you so much for being on our show. We call it Voices from the Frontlines, and we hope to be talking to you again.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it a great deal.